Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwartztraber, your host. On today's show, Europocracy. Is Europe's backlash against U.S. government surveillance hypocritical? Should the European Union be looking at its own practices rather than focusing so much on ours? Joining me in our D.C. studio to discuss this is Stuart Baker. He's a partner at Steptoe & Johnson, and before that, he was the first Assistant Secretary for Policy at the Department of Homeland Security. Stuart, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And you should check out Stuart's own podcast. It's called Steptoe Cyber Law, and you can find it on the iTunes store or your favorite podcast
app. Yes, you can.
So, Stuart, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but to bring listeners up to speed, in October, the European Court of Justice, Europe's highest court, struck down an agreement known as Safe Harbor. And since the year 2000, that agreement enabled tech companies to send data across the Atlantic. And that was arguably critical to their success. And what led to the agreement being struck down was an Austrian law student named Max Schrems brought a case against Facebook, saying that Facebook could not assure him that the NSA and other intelligence agencies in the United States were not accessing his information, so that the United States privacy protections were inadequate. Now, you had an op-ed recently in the Washington Post called The Europocracy Prize, Coming Soon, and you argue that this obsession, this data protection dogma in the United States is hypocritical. How so?
So it's pretty straightforward. European law was designed to say, essentially, we need to be able to ensure that if European data is exported from Europe, that it will continue to be governed by laws that protect privacy adequately. That's the basis of all of the discussion. And what the European Union has said is it's going to measure the adequacy of other countries' laws. You may or may not agree with that notion. You may not agree that the law that governs the data when it leaves Europe is going to be the law of the country that receives it, but that is the approach. The problem with this is that Europe has turned the adequacy doctrine into a purely one-sided attack on U.S. policies. They have negotiated, I personally negotiated at least two deals with Europe in which they were challenging some aspect of our data privacy regime. They probably challenged the U.S. law on data protection a dozen times. And at the same time, while claiming that this is a universal rule, they've never challenged anyone who wanted to export data to Russia or China or Algeria or Saudi Arabia. Those are all among the top 10 trading partners of Europe and not exactly havens of human rights. But Europe is uniquely focused on harassing the United States over data protection in ways that don't really reflect existing law and certainly don't reflect the U.S. commitment to privacy.
So if Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, major European trading partners are arguably engaging in surveillance practices that are worse than the United States, coming from a privacy advocate's perspective, why do you think they're ignoring those countries and focusing so much on us?
Because they hate us?
Is that really it?
No, I think there's a unique hostility to the United States among European elites. And the European Commission, the whole idea behind the European Union was a sort of frenemy approach to the United States. It was, we really would like to compete with the United States, but to do that, we have to be bigger than any one European country. And so they have spent much of their existence as a jurisdiction thinking of ways to go chest to chest with the United States. And this issue has turned out to be the most popular issue that they could raise. And they have, as I said, initiated a dozen negotiations with the United States because they feel it gives them leverage over the United States. Now, interestingly, if I can say, and I said this in the article, they have threatened to cut off data flows a dozen times and negotiated against that threat, and they've never once done it. This is to Europe in their relationship with the United States what nuclear weapons is to Kim Jong-un. Of course, he doesn't want to use them, but he wants to threaten them over and over and over again and sell them for a new concession from the United States over and over and over again.
So it's just a negotiating tactic, but just going back to those other countries, how does data get from Europe to Russia if they don't have a safe harbor agreement of their own? Since 2000, we've had that framework. That's what enabled this dynamic of sending data across the Atlantic. But how does Europe deal with countries like Russia and China if their data protection is even much worse than democratic regimes, arguably?
I think the irony here is this threat only matters to people who believe in law and who believe that the law will be applied to them. I don't think the Russian companies really are particularly worried about the law. It's U.S. companies that have been worried about the law, and they have kept insisting they want legal certainty, and that need for legal certainty has led them to over and over again ask the Europeans to affirm that they can export the data. The only other way this issue arises is if there is a data protection agency investigation of data transfers, and that requires somebody to bring a lawsuit or a claim in front of a data protection commission in Europe. And ironically, not only do European elites dislike the United States, but the left over there, which brings a lot of these claims, is also pretty hostile to the United States and less hostile or less inclined to pick fights with Russia and China.
So you say that these kinds of things like the safe harbor getting struck down, that only matters to countries like the United States because we care about the law, whereas maybe some countries like Russia and China don't care as much. But is there something else that governs that arrangement? I mean, how do these countries operate with each other?
So the ground rule for Europe is no data should leave the country, should leave the jurisdiction without a determination, without the exporter being comfortable that the data is being sent to a country that has adequate law. But that determination doesn't have to be made by a negotiated agreement. It could be simply a decision by the party that's exporting the data that they believe that it's going to a place that is lawful, they're lawfully authorized to export it to. You can go to data protection agencies and ask them for to approval of your rules for exporting data and perhaps get something approving exports to Russia or China or Algeria or Saudi Arabia. My guess is that those exports have been rare enough and low enough level that the people who are engaged in them are just skipping any approval at all.
So in contrast to the Schrems case, where it was the United States and the European Union negotiating an agreement that would then affect the way that companies operate, you're saying there are just companies in Europe who just kind of put a blindfold on and say, when I send data to Russia, you know, I'm just going to assume that they're going to not surveil it? Is that how that's working?
I think that's exactly right. And probably if you want to know whether countries are, whether data is being exported to one of these countries, call up your app store and type in Algeria or Saudi Arabia or Russia or China, and you'll find dozens of apps that are in the local language, relate to the local country, and almost certainly are storing their data to some degree in those countries because that's where they originated. But that's a relatively new development, and thus far, no one in Europe has bothered to challenge that.
And you've got the example of VK.com. That's Europe's largest social network, and it's based in Russia.
Right.
And they don't seem to be, there doesn't seem to be a focus on them the way that there is such a focus on Facebook. So that kind of gets to the issue that you're talking about, where certain countries are getting a pass, and you argue in the op-ed that United States is being picked on.
Well, and particularly because if there's any country in the world that respects privacy versus surveillance, it's the United States. We lead the world in setting limits on what our government can do by way of surveillance. Frankly, we are much more aggressive about policing surveillance than the Europeans are about policing their own surveillance, let alone Russia or China or Algeria.
So I want to get to the adequacy of oversight of U.S. surveillance programs, but going back a little bit, you argue that Europe is engaging in a kind of North Korean-style negotiating tactic where they just create a big stink and then use that to get concessions that might be unrelated. But if this is all just rhetoric and this is all showmanship, why are you so concerned that the Safe Harbor Agreement was struck down, and why are you so concerned about what you call data protection dogma?
So for a long time, and probably properly so, the rules that Europe was trying to insist on were about how data was handled by the private sector. And really, no one thought that there were significant data protection restraints on what governments did with data until after 9/11. Before that, and when the Safe Harbor Agreement was negotiated, the assumption was as long as a company was respecting European law, that's all that the Europeans could expect upon export of the data. But after 9/11, Europe got it in their head that they could restrain exports of their data because they didn't like how the United States was conducting the war on terror. And this is how I got involved in it. When I was at DHS, I had to negotiate over our use of airline reservation data to spot people we didn't want getting on planes coming to the United States. And the Europeans probably had half a dozen negotiations in which they complained about the fact that we were using that data for that purpose. Now, of course, ironically, they're in the process of developing a trans-European travel reservation system. But as they've begun to say, we think this gives us a say in other countries' surveillance law, it has become even more obvious that this is hypocritical because, as I say, we have lots of restraints on surveillance, far more than any other country, far more than even European governments. And their decision to say U.S. law is inadequate really reflects a hangover in Europe of the assumption that the country is governed by Guantanamo-loving cowboys.
But you mentioned that they don't enforce this. They'll create a big scandal, yes, but they don't enforce it. So you argue in the op-ed that this decision to strike down Safe Harbor could hamper counterterrorism efforts. How so?
So here's the problem. The most significant new intelligence program that we adopted after 9/11 was something called 702, which essentially looks at the data of foreigners who happen to have used a U.S. service so that their data is stored here. So, for example, if you use Hotmail and you're in Algeria and you're sending Hotmail to another Algerian, your data is still going to be stored in Silicon Valley. And that means the United States can get access to it using the 702 program. This has turned out to be enormously valuable in finding terrorists and stopping terrorist plots, including in Europe. But if the data flows are interrupted, or even if the providers of Hotmail are persuaded that they can no longer store data in the United States, they have to store it someplace else, then we will lose access to that information and therefore access to those terrorist plots.
Earlier you said that the United States yields to no nation in imposing legal limits on government surveillance, that we are unique in that way, that we have solid oversight. But at the heart of the Schrems decision was concerns over U.S. surveillance, and privacy advocates would certainly disagree with that characterization. And let's talk about why Safe Harbor was struck down. Europeans don't have rights under the Privacy Act because we haven't passed the Judicial Redress Act. Law enforcement can still get access to certain emails and online communications without a warrant because ECPA, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act of 1986, a long time ago, is outdated. You mentioned the 702 reform, or the 702 program, which often American privacy advocates are concerned that a foreign surveillance program is roping in American communications, which the USA Freedom Act's reform would not help. And then you've got Executive Order 12333, which Ronald Reagan signed, which also has surveillance concerns. So what do you say to privacy advocates who say, we haven't gotten our act together, and that's why Safe Harbor got struck down, and until we get our act together, the new Privacy Shield Agreement, which is just Safe Harbor renamed, will also get struck down?
So there's a lot in that. let me try unpacking it. I have no doubt that privacy advocates believe that there should be more restraints on surveillance. I don't happen to believe that. But I think the real question is, compared to what? Inadequate as privacy campaigners would say U.S. law is, it is nonetheless far more demanding than the European law. For example, you cited ECPA, the 1986 law, and I would say right off the bat, I would join in suggesting that there should be a sunset on the 1986 ECPA. It's a privacy law that has produced a lot of unintended consequences. If we think that technology-specific laws ought to come to an end and be reauthorized, that's one that I would say should be subject to a sunset. But under ECPA, no electronic communications provider can give data to the to a law enforcement agency without a subpoena. In fact, in Europe, most countries, you can just walk in, if you're law enforcement, to an electronic communications provider and say, so would you like to volunteer some information to us? We're kind of interested in this guy. And they fall all over themselves to provide it. And then the government says, oh, and by the way, don't tell them. Just a little informal gag order on you. And again, the electronic communications providers just say, yes, sir, jawohl. That enthusiasm for just responding to the government is much more common in Europe than it is in the United States.
Yeah, we've seen news stories about Yahoo and Microsoft, and they don't always comply with requests for user data. While privacy advocates may have an issue with the percentage there of what they comply with and what they don't, the U.S. companies seem to be pushing back a little bit on the surveillance state. Now,
they have more legal tools to use to push back, which they don't have in Europe, which is why it's so absurd that the European Court of Justice thought that U.S. law was not adequate compared to European law. The way they got there is they relied on misrepresentations and, frankly, I think clippings from The Guardian, which I wouldn't rely on to tell me what the weather's going to be tomorrow.
well, maybe we'll have a reporter from The Guardian to come on to take issue with that characterization. But so Safe Harbor got struck down. You see that as an act of hypocrisy. Last week, the Department of Commerce and the European Commission were very excited about this new thing called Privacy Shield, which we've talked about on the podcast. And does this now change your thinking at all, the arguments you made in your op-ed, now that there is a new agreement?
No, it doesn't. As you said, a Privacy Shield is just a slightly buffed-up version of the Safe Harbor with a few more promises from the United States. It's not a substantial change. The European Court of Justice did give more authority to the data protection agencies to look into the adequacy of law in other countries.
And these data protection authorities, just for listeners' edification, these are individual data protection authorities within member states of the European Union. So it's not like a European body, it's individual countries. And now it would be like having each state in the United States having its own data protection authority, which can create some serious confusion for companies.
And make essentially foreign policy for the entity that they're speaking for. So in Germany, it's the Länder, it's the individual states that have data protection authorities. So Schleswig-Holstein is the lender that has caused the most difficulty over privacy. I'm not sure how many people live in Schleswig-Holstein, but it's not a lot. And yet they may be driving the entire dispute between the United States and Europe over the next couple of years.
So given the what you argue is the hypocrisy on the part of European authorities about their unwillingness to look at their own surveillance practices and their focus on United States practices, at the end of your op-ed, and going back to the title of your op-ed, you propose a prize.
Yes.
Tell us about this Europocracy prize.
I thought it was very simple. We ought to fund a prize and award it to the first person who actually challenges the adequacy of the laws of Algeria and Saudi Arabia and China and Russia under European law. Let's force Europe to live by the rules that it continues to insist are general universal principles, but which somehow they only apply to the United States. Because I think it's very important to recognize what Europe is trying to do here. It's basically saying, we believe in this particular right, and we are going to impose sanctions on every other country in the world if they don't interpret the rights of man exactly the way we do. I don't believe they can sustain that. I think that if they try to do that with Russia and China, Saudi Arabia and Algeria, they're going to be very surprised at the reaction that they get, and that will lead them to be a little more humble when they try applying their law to the United States. So the goal here is simply to say if we will fund this to the tune of at least $10,000, and anybody who manages to file in a substantial number of jurisdictions, let's say three jurisdictions in Europe, against those 10 countries, and succeeds in getting a ruling, will get the money. And I'm hoping that that will lead to a kind of a crowdfunded exercise to determine just how much Europe really means to these principles when they're talking about somebody other than the United States.
And for guidelines on how to engage in this process and to win the prize, you can check out Stuart's op-ed in the Washington Post. It's called The Europocracy Prize Coming Soon. It is linked to in the show notes of this episode.
Excellent, excellent. We are also hoping to get a 501c3 Indiegogo campaign launched, and to get to make it possible to make anonymous and tax deductible donations to the prize. I've already received a substantial amount of mail from people who are eager to make those contributions, and I'm looking forward to that.
Well, listeners, look out for the Europocracy Prize. It is coming soon. That's it for today's show. My guest has been Stuart Baker. He's a partner at Steptoe & Johnson. He was also the first Assistant Secretary for Policy at the Department of Homeland Security. Check out his podcast, the Steptoe Cyber Law Podcast. You can find that in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. Follow us at Tech Freedom on Twitter or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom and find this podcast in the iTunes store. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review. It will really help us out. Stuart, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you for listening.